Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening, and we are brought to you, as always, through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who believe that the values and ethics and principles of conservative thought are those which created this nation and which have preserved its liberties, its freedoms, and its stature in the world, and will continue to do so so long as all of us keep those values. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is the spoiled brat syndrome. The other day, a friend of mine, a co-worker who is also in the education business, put a link to a website called The American Thinker and a specific article by a gentleman named Charles Baddock. The title of the blog post was The Spoiled Brat Syndrome. And when I read it, it was as if I were hearing my very own words coming from the mouth of someone I didn't even know. The basic tenet of the article is that the famous and illustrious progressive, John Dewey, who was so impressed with the Soviet Union's teaching a child to be part of the collective when he visited their schools, promoted for this country this idea that children should be educated interactively rather than just required to memorize sets of facts and figures and processes. And that if a child were engaged in the act of learning and doing more individual actions or hands-on learning, he or she would be more likely to be an involved, participating citizen. Dewey's ideas began to be brought forward in the 1920s and 1930s. If any of you have ever read the novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, you might remember the little girl in the story, Scout Finch, who was told by her teacher in first grade that she wasn't allowed to read, that her father had taught her to read and that was wrong and she couldn't do that anymore because everybody had to start out on an even footing and be taught how to read according to the, as her brother put it, Dewey Decimal System, which was going to be running the whole school. Well, that was pretty accurate because that was about the time in the 1930s where the novel is set that Dewey's ideas were put into public education. The idea that, as her brother Jim said, if you want to learn about cows, you go and milk one. And his sister's response was, well, why do I want to learn how to milk a cow? And Jim, her brother, said, well, don't be stupid. It's a Dewey Decimal System and everybody's going to have to do it. Well, like many progressive ideas, it sounded wonderful. The idea that children would develop a love of learning because they'd be more engaged and involved in the learning process. They could do things instead of just sitting and listening to the teacher. Well, like most progressive ideas that sound good, this one had and is continuing to have unintended consequences. And the unintended consequence is the spoiled brat syndrome, as Mr. Baddock puts it. Instead of the child-centered classroom, meaning the engagement of the child in the learning process, it became the child as the star of the classroom and the child in control of the classroom. We see this in today's classes with our love of mainstreaming and collaborative education, where children with so-called emotional and behavioral disabilities are accommodated in a classroom rather than removed from it, where they can be taught in a more efficient and outcome-encouraging environment. Because if they were not in classes with students who don't have these problems, their self-esteem would be wounded, they would be labeled, and they would be inevitably doomed to fail throughout their entire lives. And as a consequence of this kind and generous wish to integrate those with disabilities into the general population, We have classrooms where students with quote-unquote disabilities in the behavioral and emotional spectrum throw tantrums in the middle of the class, and the teacher and the aide and the special education teacher and everybody else have to stop to deal with the child's inability to control him or herself in a learning environment. What this does, it teaches all the other kids, as well as the child with problems, that the world is going to adapt to them, that they are special, that they can do anything they set their minds to do or their hearts on. And it eliminates the understanding that everybody, sooner or later fails at something. And like my friend Linda in the chat room just mentioned, the real world will be a very hard lesson for these children one day. We have seen the results in the Occupy Wall Street mentality, in the progressives in charge of our Congress and our White House right now. The idea that everybody is entitled to be special. Well, that's a really good trick. We are all unique, yes, and we are all special in that sense. But the term special has come to mean I get to have everybody bow down and worship my differences, and I am not required to abide by the general mores and behaviors and courtesies of a society. I can throw a tantrum in the middle of class and no one will I will not have any negative consequences from this. Someone will quietly take me into a corner and give me a piece of candy or take me for a walk because I don't feel like learning whatever it is the teacher is teaching, or stop the class until I have calmed down and then resume whenever the temper tantrum is finished, so that everybody else in class has to wait for this special child to have his or her way before learning can commence or continue. We have seen, ladies and gentlemen, in the last 20 years, the results of this interpretation. The concept of the individual has undergone a radical shift from the idea that the individual is the mover and shaker of the world, because the individual is willing to take a risk. And if that risk proves unsuccessful, they continue to take a risk until they are successful. That understanding of individuality and the movement of new ideas and creativity has gone by the wayside. Now, the individual is praised for being unique and told that he or she is entitled to be taken care of in all situations and for all of their life, never permitted to fail, never permitted to think that they weren't quite as good as someone else at a particular task. They must be praised for existence. They must be praised for for those of you listening, if we have lost sound, okay, apparently Blog Talk is having difficulty with keeping up the connection between my computer and Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to continue, and hopefully you all can still hear me. And my friend Linda in the chat room says the sound is back, so my apologies, ladies and gentlemen, for the loss. Getting back to our topic of the spoiled brat syndrome, when you have children of your own, you generally do not promote a happy family when one child is given the privilege of not having to obey the rules and everybody else is told that they must abide by them. This is the situation in many of our classrooms. If you have more than one child, in general, most parents create rules or set rules that all of their children, no matter what their individual personalities, skills, deficiencies are, need to abide by in order for the family to be a cohesive unit and for the members not to, you know, knife each other in the middle of the night. Well, extrapolating that to larger society, when we tell an individual that he or she is not subject to the rules of that society because they are special, they are disabled, they are handicapable, or whatever the current politically correct term is, we basically that they are, in effect, beyond needing to be aware of the consequences of their own actions. When there are no negative consequences for behavior that is unacceptable in society, why are we surprised when such behaviors mount? Why are we shocked when we see people walk into shoot their way into an elementary school and kill 20 children? When we have been happily telling many, many children for the last 20 years, they don't have to follow the rules because they're special and they need accommodation. When they lash out verbally because they're frustrated or angry, and they are not corrected in this behavior, but told, oh, it's okay, we understand, you can go back to work when you calm yourself down. What break, what control, self-control is being taught? None. In order for any human being to achieve a functioning adulthood, he or she has to learn self-control. Babies don't have any. When they hurt, they scream. When they're hungry, they cry. When something tickles them, physically or otherwise, they laugh. Now, in a baby, doing all those things in the middle of a solemn funeral service is perfectly acceptable. But it isn't acceptable for a teenager or an adult. Self-control, ladies and gentlemen, is taught. It's taught by the consequences one receives for inappropriate, uncontrolled behavior. Remove those consequences, and there is no self-control. We don't that self-control is something that appears to descend from the heavens magically on a person without any education in it whatsoever. The idea likely to learn when they are happily engaged is perfectly true. They are. If a child is bored or restless or not feeling good or unhappy, their attention is going to be on their emotional state and not on what the teacher is trying to teach them. This is expected. That's why in primary school, kindergarten, first, second, and third grade, lessons are usually short to match the attention span. There are several different activities to keep the restless child at least activities, and this I guess you could say adaptation to the age level of the child has to eventually get lessened as that child grows. When you have a 3-year-old who can't control his temper and throws his blocks at the wall, this is something you work on correcting. You don't tell the 3-year-old, we understand, you're just communicating that you're unhappy, it's okay, and expect that 3-year-old to automatically stop when he or she reaches 4, 5, or 6. They don't. Human beings behave in ways that give them pleasure or profit. If you reward a child, okay, by lack of negative consequences for inappropriate, disruptive, or violent behavior, then that child will continue that behavior. I saw this with my own grandson. In regular school, he was inclined to throw temper tantrums, throw things, hit other students, kick the teacher, because he didn't like to do a particular kind of academic work. The methods used to deal with this were to take him in a corner and give him a piece of candy and tell him he could rest and play a game until he was ready to go back to learning. He was never told that his behavior was unacceptable. He was never given a negative consequence. In fact, he was rewarded for his disruptive behavior. Well, my grandson is not stupid. He had lots and lots of temper tantrums and lots of throwy things and lots of kicking people, biting people, hitting people. Until it got to the point that he was being a danger to other students. And then the school called his mother and told her that he was about to be expelled. So she went in to find out what was going on. And that's when she discovered exactly how his inappropriate behaviors were being dealt with. She exploded to the point where she removed the child from the school and fought to get him placed in a more restrictive and structured environment in a school that deals with children with emotional and behavioral disabilities, not by rewarding them, but by negative consequences that teach them such behaviors are not acceptable. After 6 months in that environment, he was doing well in school. Classroom tantrums had been reduced to less than one per month. His interactions with other students were much more positive because he figured out, because he's smart, that doing the stuff he had been doing was going to get him something he didn't like. So, because he didn't get pleasure out of the results of these behaviors, he stopped exhibiting them. It seems to be pretty straightforward to those of us who can think and who aren't educational theorists and progressives, assuming that somehow or other children raise themselves without any help, so long as they're loved and petted and given candy every time they do something you don't like. To most of us who have a thinking brain, what the alternative school did was the sensible and logical and productive approach. When the school, the original school, said that they were ready to take him back again, and my stepdaughter went to talk with them and find out just exactly what kind of consequences were going to be put in place, they told her that they would do the consequences that they had been doing when he was enrolled with them before, since he was doing so much better. She refused to have him put back in regular school. And this year, he is back in the more restrictive environment and is doing very, very well. His abilities in reading have improved markedly. He always was good at math, but the environment in which he is learning is suitable to teach him how to control himself. And believe me, it wasn't that he didn't get lessons in self-control at home. He did. The things that he pulled at school, he would never have done at home because his mother would have, horrors, administered physical punishment. No, he would not have been burned with hot cigarette butts or chained in a closet or whipped with a cat of nine tails. He would have had his tender little bottom spanked. So his behaviors at home were nowhere near as disruptive and as inappropriate and as spoiled brat as they were at school, because at home there were negative consequences that taught him such behaviors were inappropriate and they would result in something that was unpleasant for him. So those behaviors he could and did control. The spoiled brat syndrome, as mentioned in Mr. Baddick's article, is what we are seeing now in our kids. And it isn't just the ones who have disabilities who are succumbing to the results, the unintended consequences of this delightful theory. It is their fellow students who do not have the protections of the Americans with Disabilities Act as it applies to education, sanctified by our happy federal government. I have had students in my ISS room whose behavior in their regular classroom was absolutely abominable. Their behavior in my classroom was polite, courteous, respectful, and hardworking. Because in my classroom, they know that violating the rules and behaving inappropriately gets them removed, sent home, and at least one day of out-of-school suspension. There are immediate negative consequences for inappropriate behavior. My friend Linda in the chat room says she's seeing the spoiled brat syndrome in our elected officials every day, and I agree with her, especially the one in the Oval Office. Have you ever noticed that the spoiled brat never admits he or she is wrong? Never admits a mistake? Never compromises? Never accepts the fact that someone other than the brat has a viable, productive idea? Never acknowledges that circumstances can change things? I want it, therefore I will have it. I won, so I'm not going to listen to you. Remind you of some of the kids that you see in classrooms? It reminds me, I see the results in a 40-plus-year-old man of 20 to 25 years of spoiled brat syndrome in not only our public education, but in the unintended consequences of civil rights legislation and the idea that somehow or other an opportunity is not enough. We must provide success in reparation for unjust treatment 5 generations in the past. The spoiled brat syndrome, ladies and gentlemen, permeates our society. If you listen to some of the idiotic people they interviewed during the Occupy movements, if you listen to some of the liberal talking heads and the entertainment figures starring in violent action movies who come out preaching about, oh, we must save our children from the evils of violence, and yet they're quite willing to have armed bodyguards protect them and star in movies in which a death or a violent act occurs about every 5 minutes because the money is so good. I am very, very, very frustrated, ladies and gentlemen, at what I see. But I'm also hopeful because I work with teachers who also see it and who do everything within their power to try to counteract this progressive ruination of future generations. As I mentioned a few moments ago, in my classroom, I don't have any problem with the so-called problem students because those so-called problem students know that there will be negative consequences if they act that way in my classroom. Granted, I do not have 25 children at a time. Also, in general, the administrators do not send children to my classroom and assume that I will modify the rules or allow them not to have to obey them. If you are sent to in-school suspension, it is with the understanding that when you are there, you will abide by the rules of in-school suspension or you will be removed. That amount of freedom to instruct in consequences is still there in my school. I don't know how long it will last. I really don't. Because all it's going to take is a lawsuit brought by a parent who will claim under the federal statutes and policies of the Department of Education that their child is being denied a free, appropriate public education by being removed from their class and put in an in-school suspension room where the accommodations for their outbursts don't exist. I know that sooner or later that will happen. Unless something radically changes. And we, ladies and gentlemen, you out there listening, those of you with kids in the public system, those of you who teach in public schools, those of you who have neighbor children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews who are being deprived of an education that will fit them to be a successful adult because of misguided and incredibly stupid applications of a failed idea. The other aspect of the spoiled brat, the child is the controller of the classroom methodology that's being used, is that our teachers are coming out of college having heard for 4 years, as they get their teaching certificate and their education degree, that if a child is not learning, it is their fault. That they are somehow totally responsible for that child doing his homework, studying for tests, paying attention in class, completing classwork assignments, listening to the teacher when they talk, focusing on the task at hand. It is the teacher who is to blame if any one of these things doesn't happen. That's the extrapolated consequence that Mr. Baddick mentions in his article. Government or government authority figures, everyone from your local sheriff and your teacher to the president and Congress and your state legislatures and governors, are somehow or other your mommy and daddy. And they are to take care of you and put up with you and feed you and clothe you and medicate you and house you and make you successful so that everybody has exactly the same amount of stuff in everybody's house and nobody ever has to face a risk. Not going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. Sooner or later, such a ridiculous, false, idiotic, absurd idea is going to topple over of its own weight, and unfortunately many people will be crushed beneath it. That real cold world of competition and the strong bullying the weak is going to flood into our peaceful, relaxed, happy, everybody's entitled to everything society. Because it cannot work. You cannot tell people who put forth effort to gain something that they are not allowed to keep it because somebody else isn't willing to put forth the same effort to get it for themselves. When you remove the incentive to produce, you lose producers. When you tell people that somebody owes them something simply because they exist, where is the motivation to work or put forth effort for anything? Where is your freedom to try when you're told that everybody gets a trophy, even if they try and fail? We reward failure, ladies and gentlemen. We elevate it to the goal by telling our kids that it doesn't exist. That the fact that you can't read at age 18 and graduate from high school shouldn't bar you from any job you want. That you're entitled to $50,000 a year income and a supervisory position in something or other. It's insanity run rampant. And there isn't anything that you can do about it by yourself. But you can talk about it. You can go to your school board meetings. You can look at the records of the people you elect to serve on your local school board. You can question at PTA meetings. You can, if necessary, pull your children out of public schools and homeschool them or try to figure out a way to send them to private school. You can lobby your legislatures to provide either vouchers for private schools or to free up the ability of parents to homeschool. We have the technology to create the kind of individualized education that actually will put in place a child's engagement in learning. instead of everybody has to learn this by this age, this time in the school year, we can set it up through schools like Carpe Diem, where a child can progress at their own pace, that they can go way ahead in math, if that's a skill area, and take as long as they need to master phonics and reading skills and comprehension, if that comes more difficult in a more difficult way for them. We cannot keep the system that we've got now because it doesn't work. We can't demand of it what it cannot produce. Any child learns better with one-on-one instruction. This has been shown over and over and over again. But it is financially, economically impossible to provide a teacher for every single American child. A live human teacher with a four-year education degree cannot be installed for every child in the country. This is what it would take, ladies and gentlemen, for the public education system to do what it is told it must do under legislative initiatives like No Child Left Behind, the Americans with Disabilities Act as it pertains to education, the concept of a free, appropriate public education for all. It is not possible to do this. We have to look honestly at the educational system, and we have to redo it from the ground up. We have to be able to educate children at home, via technology, and in groups. But we can't do all of that in one classroom with the traditional 25 students and one teacher. It is impossible. And we cannot put the burden of learning on the teacher when it rightly belongs on the child. I cannot learn for anyone. I cannot open up the skull of another human being and place into it what I have learned in my 60-plus years of living, both academically and experientially. I cannot do this. We may, in the next 10 years, be able to do that with an implantable chip, a biochip, similar to what we put in our dogs and cats so we can find them. My friend Linda says I'm so tempted to open up their skulls and shove it in. And she's right. I wish I could. But I really don't want to hurt the poor little thing, so I don't think that's going to work. But we're heading in the direction where we may be able to do that with technological explosions in artificial intelligence and in our ability to use computer technology and electronics to achieve amazing results. But we can't do it now. And even if we could, the knowledge, information, the processes, they have to be attainable someplace. There may very well be people who can't tolerate the computer in the head physically. We may not be able to develop the material with which to do it, to stick it in everybody's head and have them all remain sane, because we still do not completely understand how our own neurological functions work. We're learning very rapidly. But that goal, if it is a goal, kind of frightens me too, because it opens the idea to brainwashing on an incredible scale, way more than the North Koreans were able to do with their prisoners of war, with the deprivation and torture and all of the other things. They could quite easily do it by just implanting an emotion chip like Data on Star Trek. But every invention, ladies and gentlemen, as my friend Linda says, is a slippery slope. The more technology we invent, the more ways we find to do things quickly and easily, the more we are inclined to believe that sooner or later we will achieve perfection, that we will achieve godhood, that we will be able to make life risk-free and people perfect. And that is the slippery slope. It's the Icarus syndrome. We can change our educational system. to provide that free appropriate public education. But we cannot do it with the classroom situation and the classroom methodology that we have now. We cannot do it with the crop of teachers that are being taught that they are responsible for someone else's learning. They're not. They are responsible for offering what they know and showing children how to do things, helping them with strategies that will allow them to remember better and think cognitively, to reason, to make discriminations between positive consequences and negative ones. That teachers are responsible for, but they cannot learn for their students. There has to be something done at home to encourage the child to open their mind to new knowledge. And I know of no way to do that other than within the family. We all have to become not only lifelong learners, but lifelong teachers as well. Whenever we give up our responsibilities for ourselves or one another, we give up our freedom. Because freedom is responsibility. When we make choices as adults, we know that those choices have consequences. We have learned this from our parents, from our teachers, used to be from our teachers, from law enforcement officials, from the societal pressure that tells us that, no, you're not supposed to do this because it makes people uncomfortable, and when people are uncomfortable, they don't want to be anywhere near you, so you aren't going to have any friends to enjoy your playtime with. These are how we learn to integrate ourselves into a society. If we do not learn them, we remain isolated from other people. Even though we might be in the same room or the same apartment house or the same class or the same business or the same work group, if we do not know how to interact appropriately with other people, we remain isolated and alone. And we are by nature a gregarious species. We need one another. We need the interaction of conversation, of learning, of developing things together as groups that apply to our individual lives, that make them better or make them more rewarding. We need one another as a species. But we also need our individuality. And the creation of a society in which our individuality is preserved, along with our society's cohesiveness, is what our founding fathers were after when they crafted the United States Constitution. They understood that we aren't God. And as my friend Linda says, as far as we know, God hasn't quit and put up a help wanted note and is not accepting resumes to replace him, at least not yet. They understood, those brilliant men who created the framework for our republic, that human beings are inherently a little lower than the angels and a little higher than the beasts. We do not have the omniscience and the omnipotence of God, thank fortune. We cannot foresee the consequences of our individual acts and choices as it spreads out into the pool of the rest of humanity. We cannot see that far ahead. So when we make what appears to be a good change because we want people to be happy and comfortable and have everything they want and need, very often we don't understand that sometimes not having what you want and not having what you need is the motivational force to invent or create so that you can survive. Many conservative Christians are very against the idea of evolution and the Darwinian theory of survival of the fittest. I understand their distaste for something that contradicts, as they see it, the biblical explanation of creation. But I think many of them misinterpret what Darwin was saying. He was not saying that the human is an animal and totally irredeemable, and that God doesn't exist and everything just sprang into being overnight. No, what he talked about was quite true and quite legitimate. It's biology, ladies and gentlemen. It's the tendency of characteristics, genetic characteristics, to replicate and increase among the gene pool when those characteristics or abilities promote survival. A rabbit that is born without hind legs is unlikely to survive long enough to produce offspring who will also have that anti-survival trait. When we teach our children that life is supposed to be easy and that you don't put forth effort because you're entitled to comfort and ease, we are telling them that they are the rabbit born without legs, and they need to go out and make more rabbits born without legs too, because the great rabbit in the sky, otherwise known as government, will take care of them, make them a burrow, catch their food, bring it to them, groom their fur, pick them up and carry them to the place where they get rid of bodily waste, and then carry them back home and pet them and tell them how good they are. Darwin's understanding and the scientific explanation of the survival instinct are quite true. They're quite real, and they're quite lovely, in that any species that cannot adapt cannot survive. We are basically telling our children that they do not need to adapt, that the world will adjust to promote their survival, not for any specific reason based on their worth or value, but simply because they are there. Well, the world won't adapt. The world will not accommodate their emotional behavioral disabilities. The world will jump up and smack them in the face because they will not be able to adapt. They will never be able to do anything because they believe that everything revolves around them and all they have to do is want, and their wants will be satisfied by something outside themselves. This concept, this idea, this progressive utopian ideology is a very good way to completely kill off the human race. And believe me, progressives know this. They just don't want you to know this. Because what progressives want to create is Plato's Republic, with the philosopher kings, which means them, making all the rules, and the happy drones in the ant colony busily working to satisfy the needs of the elite, and kept fed with bread and circuses, and content with gains, so that the elite can prosper and reproduce and maintain their hold on power. And this will kill the human race, ladies and gentlemen, because we are not a collective mind. We are not a hive. We are not an ant colony. We are not a species of drone that lives to feed and care for a bloated queen so that queen can reproduce more and more drones to continue feeding her. The progressives will say that their utopia, per Agenda 21, is to make equal stuff in everybody's house, Mr. Reverend Sharpton's dream, that everybody will live in sustainable communities, that everybody will have enough to eat and clothing to wear and work to do and housing and medical care, so long as they give up their right to make their own choices. If you give up your right to choose, yes, you'll be perfectly safe. Of course, you won't be able to do anything without being told to. You will not create, you will not invent, and neither will those in authority over you. They will continue to tread the same well-worn paths with the same materials and the same technology because there will be no new ideas. There will be no think outside the box because those who think outside the box will be dangerous. They will upset the progressive utopia. They will cause dissension and discomfort and rivalry and competition among the drones. Because they will achieve a reward of sorts by figuring out a better way to do something. So they must be eliminated. Because if they get a reward and nobody else does, nobody's the same anymore. Everybody isn't equal anymore. The spoiled brat syndrome, ladies and gentlemen, sounds like a joke. And it's very small right now. Very few people are paying attention. Very few people are realizing that they are buying into the spoiled brat syndrome themselves. Very few people are going to realize until they are locked up in a happy little prison, treading a treadmill to produce power for the elites, that, oh my God, is this the equality that I dreamed of? I highly recommend you read the novel that Glenn Beck has published called Agenda 21. It's a dystopian story. For those of you who aren't familiar with the literary term dystopia, it means a dysfunctional, supposedly perfect society. Well, in Agenda 21, the novel, you see the progressive ideas of the UN and their Agenda 21 carried to its inevitable conclusion. And even there, there is the ember, the spark of human individuality. Even in that horrible gray world, there are still those who have managed to escape the tyranny of progressive equality. The spoiled brat syndrome, ladies and gentlemen, is permeating more and more of our governmental institutions. And it started in our schools. Because those who understand human nature understand that if you wish to control a population, to change its direction so that it no longer chooses its own way, and if you're willing to wait, you start with the young. Young children are malleable clay. They look to the adults around them to explain their world, to give them the guidelines they need to function, to teach them the skills and attitudes and behaviors that will make them successful. And I'm not talking about just material success. Successful in the sense of having friends, hearing themselves praised, feeling good about themselves. Yes, that happy little self-esteem. We all need that. We all need to feel that we are of value and of worth. But when the spoiled brat syndrome becomes the teaching tool, we are not being taught that we are of value. We are being taught that we are of supreme value. That our value exceeds the value of anyone around us. That if someone around us has more of anything than we do, it's not fair. And they must be forced or coerced into sharing with us their bounty. Because we are special and we are entitled to an equal share. This whole fair share mantra that our current president is so fond of talking about is another indication of the spoiled brat syndrome. If I and four of my friends join together to bake a series of cakes, okay, we go and buy the materials, we put forth the effort to mix the ingredients together, we jointly pay the electric bill to bake the cake, we burn our fingers because we forget to use a hot pad when we take the cakes out of the oven. We frost them. We cool them. We decorate them so that they're ready to eat. And then everybody in the neighborhood comes in and eats all the cakes. They haven't contributed. They haven't paid for our effort. They haven't bought ingredients. They're not paying the electric bill. But we have cakes and they don't. So obviously, they are entitled to come in and eat those cakes. But they get an equal share simply because they exist. They're there. It's a fairly simplistic analogy, ladies and gentlemen, but that's the spoiled brat syndrome. Have you ever watched a bunch of kids where you've got one very spoiled only child playing with a bunch of other kids who grew up with brothers and sisters? And everybody's playing with toy cars, and one kid likes the red car, and another kid also likes the red car, so they kind of fight over it, and the kid who's bigger gets the red car, and the other kid has to take the blue car, and the spoiled brat is sitting in the middle of the cars crying like crazy because it wants the red car, and everybody's supposed to give it to him, but they won't. Remind you of our president? It does me. It's the spoiled brat syndrome, ladies and gentlemen. Not only is it ruining our future and our children's future, it's ruining our country. This nation wasn't founded on the spoiled brat syndrome. This nation was founded on the, if you want it, work for it. And then be generous enough to help someone else so they too can work for theirs. That was the basic idea. That you put forth effort to take care of yourself and those who are dependent upon you, and you share with those who are less fortunate and give them a hand up and not a hand out, so they too can then take care of those who depend on them. Charity came from the individual heart and the individual spirit. Not government mandated, I take your money so I can give it to this guy over here because he doesn't have as much as you do. Your fair share means you don't actually have your share. You have what the government decides is the fair share for everybody. And the government doesn't even bake the cake. Yet they tell you that they have the right to come in and take your cakes and share them with people who don't have any cake because you are greedy and selfish and evil and you won't give anybody else any of your cake. Progressives are often thought to be, quote-unquote, liberal. Well, the meaning of liberal has changed over the last 40 to 50 years, ladies and gentlemen. Liberal used to mean something very different from its current connotation. It used to mean that one favored the idea that workers should reap the rewards for their effort, and that those who were in charge of a group of workers could not exploit them to their own betterment and throw them away as if they were nothing but waste matter. That used to be the definition of liberal. The definition of liberal used to include the idea that I may disagree with your lifestyle or your belief system or your sexual practices, but so long as you don't force me to engage in them, you do what works for you. So long as it doesn't break my arm or pick my pocket, you have that right. That used to be part of being liberal, but it's not anymore. Not the way the progressives use the term. The progressives are the most unliberal bunch of people you will ever want to meet, because their agenda, their ideas, Their view of educating your children is to make them into dependents, eternal children who never grow up, who are never capable of making their own decisions or making their own way in life. Looks like I have a caller, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see who's on the line tonight. Hello.
Hi, Carrie. It's Linda here in California. You're doing a great show today. It's absolutely marvelous. You've touched on so much. I mean, everything that Glenn's been talking about when his show yesterday with the people talking about making children dependent is not doing them any favors by any stretch. And then you mentioned the word liberal, which comes up in my book, Road to Serfdom, and that was written 80 years ago by Hayek. And so I'm, you know, these progressives love their Hegelian dialectic wordsmithing, don't they? They will do anything to convince people. And Hayek talks about this repeatedly, whether it's central plan fascism, the old Nazism, and this total central control. And this is what the progressives have wanted to do in this country, and they're getting their way pretty much right now. I'm terrified with these mandates from idiots, you know, in chief, with the proposals. And everybody's up in arms about it, literally. But to try to buy ammo at Walmart, the shelves are empty. Absolutely empty. Couldn't get anything that I needed for mine for a song, dance, or what. I could sit on my head. It doesn't matter. You know, unless we had a replicator.
Fascinated by that? Did you see Glenn's show?
Yes, absolutely. And it's very, you know, he's right. He calls it what it is. Technology is fire. If you control it, it's fine. When they start talking about artificial intelligence and implanting brains and all that crap, and oh my God, that's a little bit too much, because we don't live in a constitutional representative republic anymore. We used to. Ben Frank, he said, if you can keep it, and we didn't. And I'm quite fearful. I don't think there's enough people in either house right now who will stand up to this guy. I don't know why, but it's terrifying to me.
It is too, Linda. And what frightens me so much is the overwhelming size of government.
Huge.
What has basically squashed us, and so many people totally unaware of what's going on, because we have focused so much on, well, government needs to come in and fix this, and we focus so much on the material, technological, innovative efforts, the easy button, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, that's one of my bugbears, and I use it a lot in too.
You know, in other cultures, and I know in Japan in particular, their idea of educating children, when they look at a child, they don't look at, you know, so much their ability as a whole. They look at effort put forth.
Yes.
This is how they reward them. It doesn't matter if they're C students, B students, or whatever. As long as they're putting forth effort, they're going to achieve. And these parents knew that. And as a society in that culture, they understood that. And we understood that way back in the founding of our country and all the way up to probably about 110 years ago, I'm thinking. And I saw the decline of the morality. As you know, the founders said that this free society and this self-governance and this self-regulation will not happen without moral people who have something outside themselves, such as a spiritual leader, whoever that is to you. You know what I'm saying? Because they did not believe in theocracy. They just fought against it. And I saw this mediocrity coming in the 80s, in the early 80s, when I saw the young people could and the slothfulness of their appearance. They didn't care. They ate whatever they wanted. They never exercised. You know, it's such a decline down that slippery slope, as we've talked about. It's very sad, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. And everybody, the parents and teachers and the society as a whole, they keep accepting this decline and say, oh, well, it's just a piercing or it's just a tattoo. No. You know, call people out on this. I mean, I was watching American Idol because I love to see kids who are actually talented, you know, have a chance. But this chick, crazy one, Nicki Minaj, I mean, like, what's with the wigs when you're a judge? I mean, you're not having, you know, your concert. I mean, it's just that fake self-esteem and what it shows to me about her is some deep inside insecurity, you know, and this is what's being accepted, and I it's weird. It's just,
yeah.
To me, it's just weird, and we've got to, when you talk about the individual and the individual sovereign, which is what we were founded on,
mm-hmm.
this means you must be responsible, and you must put forth effort, which is pure capitalism, which is not
exactly.
a bad thing, the free market. And then you have to go a little bit outside yourself and say, no, I'm not a spoiled 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I am not allowed to take things from people. I do go by the Ten Commandments. And if somebody's in need and they're hurting or they're hungry, yes, now I'm going to be a charitable giver, because a cheerful heart has a continual feast, according to the Bible. And when you serve others of your heart, not by mandate from a stupid government, you are serving God. And these are things we've got to get back to, or we're doomed. And it's got to start local.
It has to. And that's one of the reasons why, as frustrated as I get, Linda, I don't just say the heck with it and retire. Because,
no.
you know, having taught for so many years, both as a private tutor and working in the public schools and so on, I know that I am not necessarily going to make a statement or teach something to every single child I come in contact with that will change their life. But I do know that there will be some. I will
yep.
give them something that will mean something to them down the road.
Yep.
And like the Japanese society that understands sometimes you don't get instant gratification, you might have to wait for the reward.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I have to wait, and I might not even live long enough to see it. But I believe that reward, that positive effect, is going to be there. And
yeah.
we have so many people now who are so focused on gimme, 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 me, 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 I'm
mm-hmm.
special, I'm wonderful, you need to recognize this, and, well, I just really don't like to do that, so I shouldn't have to. You know, one of the analogies that I use, I never enjoyed math. I can't stand math. I can do it, and I can teach
uh-huh.
it. But to me, math is analogous to cleaning toilets. It's something that you have to do, but you don't necessarily have fun while you're doing it. And this concept, the kids look at me like, huh? And the other one that really freaks them out is you don't have to like somebody to learn from them.
Right. They don't
the
get it.
The assumption that their teacher is there to be their good buddy, their BFF,
no.
their mommy, their grandmommy, their nursemaid.
You are a person who has been so well trained as a mentor that you are almost a sensei, and they don't know the difference between, you know, some stupid Facebook friend, which is fake
mm-hmm.
anyway, you know, and reality. And this is why that technology can go south very quickly,
mm-hmm.
where you cannot tell that machine can be taken out and not only replicated, it can also be stomped by a hammer. Not
yep.
a person, and they don't have rights in court, but you do, because you're flesh and blood, and mm-hmm. people are going to be able to distinguish. Look at
and
our society. Oh,
and,
my God.
And you can't get replicated from the original pattern when you're no longer here.
Exactly.
A machine can. I mean, you know, if you've saved a copy of the software, you can replicate that happy little robot anytime you want, even if he gets blown up in a nuclear explosion. Doesn't happen with us.
No, that's it.
And
oh, my gosh.
The understanding of what teaching and learning are, you know, they get so in love with the idea that, as I've said before, they try these experimental garbage teaching methodologies in lab schools and universities with the children of PhDs. And then
mm-hmm.
they say, oh, goody, it worked. And then they go put it in the inner city, you know, with people who have 5 brothers and 6 sisters and nobody's got the same father and a mom
yeah.
who is, you know, hooked on crack and gets
mm-hmm.
ABC money so they can eat cereal at home, which is all she's got
right.
in the house, and get breakfast, lunch, and an afternoon snack at school and join a gang and beat the heck out of anybody who isn't a member of the gang and steal whatever they own and sell it to get money to either reinforce mom's crack habit or start one of their own.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's absurd and it's insane. And unfortunately, what people are not going to be willing to admit, Linda, they will not admit or accept the fact that there is evil, that people can
mm-hmm.
be evil, and that not everybody is a redeemable angel. I'm sorry. Not everybody is, you know?
I think Milton Friedman asked Phil Donahue that one time a long time ago, and he said, mm-hmm. where are you going to find these angels in our government or angels among us to govern us?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, there is a series of novels, fantasy novels, by a woman named Mercedes Lackey that are set in a mythical kingdom, a fantasy world called Valdemar. And I love them. I would love to live there. But what makes Valdemar so special is that their guardians of the peace, called heralds, have what's called a companion, which is in the form of a horse, but it actually is a guardian spirit, a messenger of God, that leads their particular herald by a close emotional and mental bond so that they cannot actively commit evil willfully. We don't have that. And as far as I know, unless God changes his mind, we're probably not going to get one anytime soon.
No. Not on this planet. We have to go to the other side.
Yes. And without that constant external conscience, we are left to try to develop one of our own. As you know, I was a one-on-one aide to a child with Asperger's syndrome. And part of my function was to be his external conscience because he didn't have one.
Oh, God.
Because there were 13 years of life where Mama said, he can't help it, he's autistic. So there's this strange, weird idea that underlies progressivism that they don't codify and they don't really, I think, believe that they actually have, that human beings are born with a conscience. They're not.
No, it's taught. It's definitely taught.
And so it's taught by negative consequences for behavior that is counterproductive.
Right. It's the same way that bigotry is taught. It's carefully taught. Don't understand these things.
No, they don't.
I don't know. Well, they don't read anything. That's part of the problem.
And thinking requires effort, my dear. And, of course, we shouldn't be asked to put forth any effort, so why should we think?
We have lots of
smart government officials who can do it all for us.
I keep telling these people around me, I say, what do you think the book's going to do to you? Bite you like an ass? My God, read something. Oh, I get so frustrated.
Well, look at the school systems, honey, that have promoted people all the way through 12 years and sent them out into the work world with a third grade reading level.
It's horrible.
They're
lucky.
They don't so badly if they were held back and their friends got promoted.
Oh, Lord.
Like the friends you have in fourth grade are going to be the people who are going to follow you your whole life and take care of you when you can't do anything. And you're going to have to decide you to do your work for you when you go to a job and you have to read a manual on how to operate this machine and you have no idea what it says. They're going to be right there and they're going to do it for you and you're going to get paid for it.
Yeah, right. In reality, when they try to go to the real workforce, you know, with people who understand capitalism and free markets, that's not going to take them very far. And it's going to be a very rude awakening. And, of course, the system is not doing these poor kids any favors. It's just, oh, my God. They're retarding them.
They are educating them to fail. They're educating them to fail.
They're setting them up. I mean, it's just, if you live in California and any of the states and cities where there's no work, you know, because of our esteemed government that just, I'd like to just trash the whole thing and start over. But as you know, I have some ideas on that. I want the giant document shredder. Oh, boy, would I have fun with that one.
Fun.
Oh, man. I could make the Weimar Republic printing machine look like, you know, a field day.
Linda's D-replicator.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
I think they called it Big Bertha, but it was on the Internet. It's a giant document. It's a shredder. It's not just for documents. You could put a whole couch in and it does the same thing. It's hysterical. I mean, I'd love to have one of those and be in charge down at D.C. Oh, man.
Wouldn't it be fun?
In a heartbeat. Oh, my gosh. I'd have to have champagne next to me. I mean, I would be so happy.
Don't tell anybody because likely some psychiatrist will come and, you know, confiscate any weapon I might have. But there have been times when I have envisioned a giant wood chipper and congressman being fed in very slowly. I'm one of those dangerous, evil, you know, gun owners.
I've had that same thought.
Have you noticed that a friend Yo is in the chat room?
Yay! I'm out. Yay! So I need a signal. I got to go back in. I'll let you finish it up, and thanks so much for taking my call. I'm going to go to a meeting tonight so we can raise some HE double hockey sticks because we've got a
right
at 10 to 21.
You raise
okay,
it into a great big bonfire. Thanks for calling, sweetie. It's always
okay,
a pleasure.
Okay, sweetie. God bless. Thanks.
Bless you, darling. For all of you folks out there, I know that those of you who are listening and who believe in conservative ideas understand that, yes, the task ahead of us is huge, but you aren't alone. There are folks like Linda and me and my friend Yolanda who are doing what they can to try to wake people up out of their fat happy slumber, their addiction to the easy button, their willingness to believe a lie if it makes them comfortable. One of the downsides, many downsides to the spoiled brat syndrome and what makes a spoiled brat is spoiled brats will believe any lie you tell them if they think they're being given their special attention to which they are entitled. They want to believe, because they are spoiled brats, that it's somebody else's responsibility to make their lives comfortable and easy and prosperous. That somehow government, the great faceless government, is put there by something or other to make them happy. Well, government doesn't make anybody happy. Ha! Surprise! No, government doesn't make people happy. You make yourself happy by satisfaction in achieving that which you have set your heart on. Or helping someone and knowing that you've done good for another living being. Government cannot make a rat happy. Trust me. Government doesn't make anybody happy. Government is supposed to preserve your ability to seek and find your own happiness. That's what that whole pursuit of happiness thing is about in the Declaration of Independence. Not that the new independent colonies would automatically have everything they want, or that being separate from Britain would make everybody happy and all the world would suddenly be bathed in light and there would be a roast chicken in everybody's oven and nice fresh bread without having to make it. No, it was the idea that you had the freedom to seek that which would make you happy. You, individual you. Not government giving it to you, not the group making you feel good about yourself. Not getting a piece of candy when you act up so you'll feel good about yourself and then automatically assume that you're supposed to be nice to people. Happiness is not mandated by law, is not created by government bureaucracy or government policy or government agencies. Happiness is something that we achieve on our own. Even if we are fortunate enough to meet, fall in love with, and marry that person of our dreams, we still have to make our own happiness. Because when we love, we take a risk, ladies and gentlemen. You cannot be happy without risk. It's not possible. All you can be is semi-asleep. Happiness means you have taken a risk and it's turned out right. It doesn't always turn out right. One of my students in ISS this week had an assignment for his English class. It was a 5-paragraph essay, and the prompt was, "Is it better to take a risk that might not work out, or avoid taking risks at all so that you don't fail?" I loved it. I was absolutely ecstatic that his English teacher posed that for an essay. And he thought about it. And he wrote a pretty good essay. Now, this particular student uses a laptop computer because he happens to be dyslexic. And nobody could read his handwriting, including himself. But that technological wonder, that happy little laptop, allowed him to show what he could do. It didn't do it for him. He still had to type it in and check the punctuation and check his spelling and so on and so forth. And he had to save it to his flash drive and then later print it out. But it was a tool for him to express his own individual thoughts and creativity. That's what technology is supposed to be. Not a crutch, ladies and gentlemen, a tool. It isn't there to stop you or prevent you from taking risks. It's there to give you a tool so that you can take that risk on a par with the other folks are taking risks too. It isn't a catering to spoiled brat syndrome. It's the cane that lets the blind man find his way, or the ramp that lets the paraplegic take his wheelchair into the courthouse so that he can listen to the town meeting, or takes him into the library so he can get at the books that will teach him what he wants to know. This is the big flaw in this whole free appropriate public education interpretation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Instead of providing tools to help those who need it, it has provided crutches to make a child more lame than he already is. It creates more and more and more spoiled brats, which will inevitably destroy this nation and the beautiful, and I say beautiful, ideas upon which it was founded. We have an incredible amount of technology. Amazing things that electronics can do. We have the ability to use electronics to allow a person who has lost nerve function in their legs to walk again and to achieve a degree of independence. And what are we doing to our kids? We are teaching them that they need a crutch and not a tool. When you don't exercise a muscle, ladies and gentlemen, it atrophies. This is standard medical knowledge. If you lie down all day for months at a time, you will be incredibly weak when you try to rise and walk. If you teach children that they can lie down all day and never need to walk, that someone will lift and carry them to the bathroom, that someone will bring them food, that someone will dress them and bathe them and clothe them and open their skulls and implant a chip that will give them knowledge with no effort on their part. You have created a useless, dysfunctional being. You have come closer than any human being has a right to come to destroying a soul. And yes, it's that serious. It is that serious. When we tell our kids that everybody owes them whatever it is they want, we create a nation of spoiled brats who are standing there waiting for a slave collar to be attached. because we are teaching them that they must be dependent, that they must wait for everyone to accommodate them. It is said by political philosophers that every empire or society that achieves dominance in the world has a lifespan of about 200 years. The inevitable falling from power comes from a society grown too top-heavy to sustain itself. When it has achieved comfort, it no longer believes that it must make effort. Our children are being trained to create that downfall because they are being taught to be spoiled brats. So far, we still have some who go out and invent, thank fortune. And my personal belief is that we always will. I am saddened by what's being done. I am afraid that a major cataclysm, societal cataclysm, is coming our way because we have a government of people we have chosen to make our laws who are fostering the creation of more and more spoiled brats. And inevitably, it will fall. And I do not wish to outlive my country. I never thought that I would. But the more I see what goes on in Washington, and the more I hear from the Oval Office and the Senate, the more fear I have that I will outlive my nation. And it breaks my heart. But then I remind myself that the chief killer of everyone is despair. And that if I give up and give in to my fear and give in to my trepidation and tell myself that there's nothing I can do and it's inevitable and everything's going to come crashing around my ears, then I'm going to hasten it. And I'm going to basically cut my own throat. And I'm just too stubborn and too mean-natured and too old and cranky to do that. So I keep going. And bless you all out there listening and my friends in the chat room and all my friends at Patriot Family. You give me the support that I need to keep doing it. You help me to avoid despair. Because all of you are lifelong listeners, all of you do care, and all of you are willing to put out yourselves and take the risk of speaking out. And I honor and thank you for it. I want all of those who are listening out there today to please join us again next week on Thursday at 6 p.m. for Patriot Education. And visit us here at Patriot Families on Blog Talk Radio every night of the week. We have a show for everyone. On Sundays, Frank is Fed Up. On Mondays, Constitution Hour. On Tuesdays, Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesdays, Right from the Coast. Patriot Education every Thursday. Foreclosure Help on Fridays. Breaking the Illusion on Saturdays. Visit our website. Read the blogs. Talk to the folks who, like you, understand that living is a risk and that is both its scary part and its joy. Join folks like you who believe the risk is worth it, that this nation is worth it, who truly take to heart and believe the founding ideals of men like Franklin and Jefferson and Adams and Sherman and Wythe and Patrick Henry and George Washington, men who did risk everything. Quite literally, they mutually pledged to one another their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to bring into being a nation and a form of government in which you have inalienable rights that come from your creator and not your government. And that when a government fails to listen and apply for the consent of those which it governs, it is your duty and your responsibility to end it and remake it so that it meets its function of protecting those inalienable rights and not assuming that it and it alone can grant them. We are the nation, ladies and gentlemen, every single one of us. We are directly responsible for the consequences of our actions or our inactions. If we do not stand up, speak out, vote, vet those who are running for office, and treat one another the way we wish to be treated, then we do not deserve this nation and we will lose it. Linda quoted Benjamin Franklin's response to the woman's question when he left the hall, Independence Hall, I believe it was, in Philadelphia, where the Constitutional Convention was meeting, when she asked him, "Dr. Franklin, what kind of government have you given us?" He responded, "A republic, if you can keep it." He understood, as did the rest of the men who framed the Constitution, that it would only last so long as people were willing to fight for it. And as long as people were capable of governing themselves as individuals, would they be able to govern themselves as a nation. We must fight spoiled brat syndrome, ladies and gentlemen, in our schools and in our government. We cannot allow ourselves to be the spoiled brat that we see around us. Nobody entitles you to anything. If you want to achieve something, you have to go out and work toward it in whatever way you feel you can. Not everybody is suited or cut out to or has the skills or the knowledge to run for office. Not everybody has the education or the desire to teach in a classroom. Not everybody has the ability, the physical ability, or the soul and the courage to be a warrior in our military. Not everyone can be a rabble-rouser and a canvasser and a phone bank talker. But everyone can talk to one another, share what we have seen, make known what's happening, and not sit down and shut up simply because it's politically incorrect to say what we believe. Yep, being alive and being true to yourself is a risk. And this nation was built on the freedom to take risks, not the guarantee that risks would go away. Thank you all so much for listening tonight. And thanks to Linda and Yo in the chat room and the guest who was here for us tonight as well. Please come back next Thursday for Patriot Education at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And between now and then, if you have ideas or concerns or suggestions for a topic for the show, give us a message on the website. That's patriotfamilies.com. www.patriotfamilies.com. Come in, leave a message, talk to us, tell us what you would like to hear and what you would like to say. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen, for listening tonight. Keep up the good work, for you are the nation. Good night and blessed be.